Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I'm Sam Legasek.
And I'm Dreadful Dan Gallagher. And we're two old buddies that have lived our life at the edge of the mainstream.
So come join us where things are a little odd.
This is the
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Oddcast, Movies, Music, and Gaming. Here with me is Dreadful Danji.
Hello. I'm feeling particularly dreadful today.
You look dreadful.
ready to spread some dread.
Yeah, lovely.
How are you doing?
Like black goo. I'm all right. I'm you know, surviving in this weird world where, well, I mean, you know, just imagine that you're in a world where no one can venture outside apart from delivery people. Where your boss might have to wear a mask all the time and you carry an unborn fetus with you wherever you go.
I was right with you up until that point.
Exactly. This is where we live in. But Hideo Kojima once again predicts our future in today's episode, which is going to be about Death Stranding.
BB, don't worry. It's okay. I'll always be with you.
See the sunset. The day is ending. And there's no pretending.
Dan, Death Stranding. Had you? I know you've watched the odd trailer. Tell me what you know about it, or what you think it might be. I'm interested from like a layman's perspective on what you reckon you're in for the next hour or so.
Well, you've been drip feeding this to me over the last few weeks. I'm expecting something really strange. Basically, the thing that I've taken away is that you seem to have a fetus strapped to your belly in its own sort of like artificial amniotic fluid sac. Mm-hmm. So presumably you're trying to like save the world by making sure this baby gets born. Other than that, it seems to be sort of like scrambling around over rocks.
You're right about almost all of that. The fact that you're carrying this baby, the baby isn't as important as you might think it is.
Well, can we just ditch it then and like just go and scram
it? It is there for a reason. It's there for a reason. So, yeah.
Okay.
So I think because if anyone doesn't know, Death Stranding was released at the end of last year and it's got Norman Reedus in it, who people know from Walking Dead. He's the main guy in it. It's also weirdly got Nicholas Winding Refn, who's the director of Drive. He's in it, but mm-hmm. just his like model. He doesn't actually do any acting in it. Same as director Guillermo del Toro. It's his model, but he doesn't actually do any acting with it.
So someone else does his voice.
Yeah, someone else does his voice. Amy Sadu, I think her name is, who's the, I believe she's French actress. She's been in, I think she's in Spectre, the James Bond film. I think she's in one of the Mission Impossibles as well. And I think she's in that. Is it Love is the Warmest Colour? Or Blue is the Warmest Colour or something? It's also got Mads Mikkelsen, who was in Casino Royale. He was the guy who cried blood. He's been in tons of stuff. He's Hannibal in the Hannibal series.
Okay.
He's in it. So there's a few.
Has there ever been a roster of such A-listers convened for a computer game?
No, it's weird. I don't really know why he's doing it, because they're all like mates or they've been attached to like projects he's done in the past. Like Silent Hills was supposed to be a Silent Hill sequel, which was going to star Norman Reedus and was going to be in conjunction with Guillermo del Toro. But it's just weird. Like Mads Mikkelsen actually acts in it. So does Norman Reedus. Even though someone seems to do the character's voice, who's not Norman Reedus, for some cutscenes in the thing, which is weird. And Nicholas Winding Refn is like some British guy. And it's just like, well, why use them at all? Like, just to, like, please your Hollywood mates. If I was making a computer game
and I had all these friends, I would do the same thing though. It'd be quite fun to be like, I'm going to put you in my computer game, Sam, but I'm going to give you a silly voice.
Yeah. You don't have to do anything. We're just going to scan you and then I can do whatever the fuck I want with you. So,
exactly. Yeah. It's just a control thing.
Yeah. Which is quite interesting. So there's that. So it was released initially just on PlayStation.
Okay.
With Sony. Kojima Productions. Hideo Kojima obviously came from doing the Metal Gear series.
Right.
Fell out with Konami and went off to do this, basically, which was his first
project.
You love
that game.
I love the Metal Gear series. And we'll definitely touch upon that in this podcast at some point. But this was his first game out of it. When it came out, a lot of people loved it. A lot of people hated it. And I can see why on both. So after having completed it, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it actually took the world of gaming and put it on its head for me. At the same time, I struggled to be able to go and recommend it for people to play, because it is a completely different gaming experience for Joe Bloggs. I think you have to be, you have to be open for this kind of experience to enjoy it, or you might want something different from gaming, or just have a different, a different expectation, or just want something different from a game. And if you're kind of going in there with that.
What's so innovative and different about it?
Well, that's just it. So I think I'm gonna try and break this up as much as I can, and I'll kind of talk about the world itself, the traversal of said world, a bit about how the game actually works, because that's quite key. And then I will start talking about the characters and the plot, because that is a huge part of it. And then some of the multiplayer aspects and all this. So you have to really bear with me and strap in. So when it gets to the plot bit, which I'll kind of try and stick at the end as much as possible, that's when there'll be spoilers. So watch out for that. But I will try and keep it as spoiler-free as possible to begin with. So let's take a little break and then we're going to hit it. Dan, I'm going to go into the bulk of Death Stranding. Are you ready for this?
I'm strapped in.
Oh, good. So basically, let's start with the objective. The whole point of the game is you have to connect something called the chiral network, which is basically the internet in a way. And you have to get people online, and you're moving from the east coast of America to the west coast. At the same time, whilst you're doing that, you're kind of doing this because you're trying to save your sister, who has been taken by a terrorist group and being held captive, even though she's kind of allowed to do whatever she wants and talk to whoever she wants in a holographic form. That's the basic premise of the whole game.
Okay.
There's so much more to it, but that is essentially what it is in a nutshell.
That's your overarching goal.
Exactly. So the world that you're living in is America, but it looks like Iceland and not the shopping center.
I noticed that in the trailer.
Yeah, it's all this kind of, it just looks completely different. Part of that is because of this thing called Timefall. Now, there's no more rain anymore. What there is it looks like rain, but it's actually Timefall. And basically, it ages anything that it touches. And I think the idea is that the whole of Earth has been aged by this Timefall rain that's kind of raining on everything. That's why the structural integrity of everything is at stake. Now, you can get caught in this Timefall. You have a little hood thing that kind of goes up as soon as it starts raining, so it keeps you safe. But the idea is that you are a delivery man delivering packages around and connecting people up to this network. So a lot of the packages and some of the vehicles and stuff that you drive, just general stuff, can be affected by this Timefall and can be basically get worse for wear. And you have to, you get a like spray that you can spray your goods with to help the container keep its integrity. And you can pump resources into structures and stuff to kind of help it get back to 100%. There is a reason for this Timefall, which I'll come on to, which is that there's these things called BTs out in the world, which are beached things or whatever. So without going too much into the story at this point, the idea is that the Death Stranding was an event where this kind of purgatory world, which is called a beach and which looks like a beach or whatever, has kind of started meshing with the real world. So dead things are starting to come into the living world. BTs are essentially dead people who are, you know, kind of being sucked into like the real world and kind of grasping for you for whatever reason. So they're these like black oily things that have these weird like cords coming out of them, which down the line you can actually cut. So instead of like battling them, which I'll kind of come on to, you can kind of cut these cords and they'll float away. But they're the kind of like, they're one of the bad guys, let's say, that you're kind of having to deal with. These sections are pretty cool because they will always be where Timefall is, because that's essentially the kind of cross between life and death. You know, that kind of area is where this Timefall stuff can happen. It can be anywhere in the world. It can kind of come and go, and you can kind of one point look at the weather report on your map so you can see where Timefall is or where it's coming or when it might end. And the BTs kind of hang out in this area. You can't see them. They're invisible. But
so how do you deal with them?
Well, this is it. So the reason why you can see them is because even though you can't see them, when you stop, they'll like appear for a bit and then disappear. So you kind of get a sense of where they are. And you have this little arm that kind of comes out and it flashes when there's a BT near, and it'll flash faster if it's really near, and then it will go to like orange and be like boop, when like one's right next to you, and then you have to like press a button to like hold your breath, and you have to try and crawl past wherever you're going. And this little arm thing that's showing you where the BTs are hooked up to this baby that you have strapped on you. So the reason why you've got the baby is because it is called a BB, which is a bridge baby, which is something that connects you between the world of the living and the world of the dead. So it can sense the world of the dead and the BTs around you. Hence how you can kind of see them and stuff, because you're like hooked into it. So it's actually a tool, put it that way, rather than a person, so which kind of comes into the story a little bit. Now,
so you're just using it for its ESP.
Yeah, basically. But they come from still mothers. So mothers that are either kept on life support or dead, basically, that were having babies. So they're still these fetuses that are placed in constant state of fetality or whatever.
Wow.
Because they're not quite alive, and obviously they're not dead. And they're...
That's quite a sick dystopic concept.
Yeah, exactly.
Quite cool.
Yeah, it is quite cool. So that's how you kind of see them. There is a part in the game where you have to give in your BB and you have to go out and do loads of missions in all this BT territory, and you just can't see the things. You can't see them, you don't get a little radar thing. You are just walking around hoping you don't bump into one. And it's
super... Why? What do they do to you?
Well, this is it. So it's super fucking tense. If they... You get ones that kind of... You get different types. You get ones that... The normal ones are just like, they're like human bodies, like just kind of hanging in the air. And then you get ones that are like this beast, and you see it's like paw prints on the floor. But you can't usually see that. You can only sense if it's near. That's... You don't want them to get you. But basically, if they see you or sense you or whatever, then all of a sudden it'll be like blue, and this black tar will start to try and swallow you up. And all these like figures like come out and try and drag you into it, and you have to try and basically get away. Now, the problem is that if you... Usually you can get... They've been very, very close to catching me and pulling me under. There's a couple of times where in the story you kind of have to, it has to happen. But I've not died properly out in the wild to these things. I've been very close, but I haven't actually done it. But they've pulled me... They pull you under, and basically the idea is that you will then die, but your character, who's funny enough called Sam, will it's like a repatriate or something, which basically means that you will, if you find your body, you'll suddenly become like a floating soul. And if you find your body in this space, he'll come back to life. So you can't die, basically. Which is interesting, and obviously plays into the whole fact that it's a fucking game. You know, it's not complete game over. But what will happen is, if you're out in the wild and this happens, your body, because you've died, has created a crater in the world. Wow. So there is kind of like a consequence to you dying.
How big a crater?
Huh?
How big a crater?
It's not happened to me, but apparently it's fairly big. I don't think it's like, you know, Akira style or anything, but I believe it's bigger than what you might think it is. And it does happen quite early on in the story with someone else that you see in a cutscene to give you a sense of it. But yeah, it's interesting. But also that kind of feeds into the story as well. So that's the BTs. Those are like the bad things. You've also got these people called mules who are human and who are basically like, how do I put it? Like, they're people that have gone insane with like delivering, and they're obsessed with like picking up packages and like stealing from delivery men and just being a general nuisance. And then later on, there are these other types of mules who are basically just like to go around and kill people. That's towards like the end game of it, because you could essentially walk past some of these people. If you're carrying nothing, they'll just leave you alone because you've not got anything. But, you know, that's very rare. You're not going to really do that, because the whole point is that you're kind of delivering stuff to and from places. So that's kind of like the world that you're in at the moment, without giving away too much of the plot. There are different structures and all this stuff, which I'll kind of come on to. But the whole point of the game is basically getting from A to B. there's bits and pieces in between that, and there are different things that happen with the story and different gameplay elements. But 90% of the game is, here's a package, you need to take it over here, or you need to go over there and pick this up and bring it back here. And how you do the chiral network is you're basically delivering things to different people, and then they'll go, thanks, I guess I'll join your network. And then you get them online, basically. And they're like, okay, great, we're part of the network. And then you go a little bit further, a little bit further. So there are like big bases, and there are like little people who have got their own like little places somewhere out in the sticks, but they're all like holograms. You very rarely see anyone in reality. And how you get from A to B can be quite difficult. So the game starts with you're just like walking. That's all you get. As you progress longer, you get like a bike, and then you get a truck. Bikes are usually the best because they're a little bit more nimble, and you can kind of go over like rocks and stuff with them if you need to. Whereas with a truck, it's a lot more difficult. You get like power legs and speed legs and whatever, which are basically, you know, like not artificial limbs, but like stuff that you just strap onto the side of your leg, and they help you carry more stuff, or yeah, go around faster. They help you. There's a traversal one, so if you're going up mountains, it will help you climb steep slopes and stuff. They're all like battery powered, so you've got to be aware of that. You have like a stamina gauge, so if you sprint a lot or if you're climbing a lot or whatever, it will deplete, and the maximum stamina that you get will deplete if you're out for too long without resting in your private room. You can up it by drinking Monster energy drink randomly on the way, which is really strange. But yeah, everything's kind of battery powered. So you can still walk and stuff, but you know, if you're using stuff, then there's battery, but then you have to like set up battery points and build them, which I'll kind of come into in a bit. So
can I say at this point, this game sounds a lot to me like Toe Jam and Earl.
How on earth does it sound like Toe Jam and Earl?
Because the land looks sort of like Iceland. They're on Earth, but it's a sort of very highly stylized
green pixel. Yep.
You walk around basically picking up parcels.
Yeah.
And you can get things like that you strap onto yourself, like rocket skates and wings. The threats, there's a character that you can't see until fleetingly when it's right in front of you, which is called the Boogeyman. And then he goes boogie boogie boogie.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And you can not Monster Energy drink, but you can drink root beer to get your get your vitals back up.
Well, who'd have thought that he'd copied Toe Jam and Earl in such a strange, convoluted, weird way? And he could have done it so much simpler.
I think I've just been thinking about Toe Jam and Earl quite a lot.
No, recently. I think you've been thinking about it for the last 30 years, to be honest. But yes, the main thing is that you're carrying all this stuff, and it's all attached, like your arms and your legs, and you pile it on your back or whatever. There's obviously a certain amount that you can actually carry. And if you can't really go over it, otherwise you just won't really move. But if you have too much on your back or whatever, you will start to sway. And you have to like hold the trigger buttons, like the L2, R2, to keep yourself upright. So literally moving, just walking, is tough if you're carrying too much. It's mad because you are looking at like, you know, usually in games, whatever, you just press up and you're running through. Whereas with this, you're looking at like, can I get up that slope? Like, I've got to be careful of that rock. Am I going to be able to get across this river? And stuff like that. And these are real problems. So it makes the element of walking and traversal generally in the game, which is usually not even thought about, part of the, an intrinsic part of the game, which is quite special in its own way. And I really enjoyed that side of it. For a lot of people, it was really boring because the thing is, if you trip or if you fall down a mountain or whatever, and all this stuff, you will lose your, you have to go find all those packages that you lost. And if you're in Timefall and if you're in Timefall snow, and it's just buried in snow, then it will just completely fuck up your container and you'll probably be fucked and have to redo the whole thing, the mission, the delivery. So
I can see why that would frustrate a lot of people.
It
be a bit tedious.
Yeah, exactly. But there are things that help you along the way. So you get like ladders that you can put places. You get like ropes and all this that you can kind of stick wherever. And you find it, you know, you do, it is quite helpful. And then once you deliver something, you get like a little summary, you get like a little, you get likes, literally you get likes. So the whole thing is based upon likes. And
likes from who?
From the NPC, the non-playable characters. Wow. You also get likes from other players, which I'll kind of come on to later. Okay. But yeah, it's basically like your score. And you get a rating, like, you know, whatever, S, which is super, to like, well, fail, I guess. I've never actually failed one. But yeah, and it rates you on like how quick you were, and you see a little map of how you've got there, and, you know, how much you were carrying at the time and all this stuff. And you just get all these different like stats, and you get a little thing at the mission thing, which is quite addictive in its own way. You know, when you see numbers go up and all that stuff, people enjoy that. And so, yeah, you've got to do all these like little missions. They're obviously story-based ones. So along the way, you'll notice that there are things that you can build. Once someone's on the network, you can build more in that area. You can build roads. You could build like storage lockers. You can build watchtowers, which so you can see more of the landscape. You can even build your own private like little shelter thing that you'd have in a bigger base. You could just build it out in the middle of nowhere. You could have like a battery charging station. You could build a timefall shelter. But all this stuff needs resources, which you can generally find out in the world with like lost packages, or you can get it from some of the bases that will naturally have this stuff. You could fabricate anything there. And the good thing about the game is that it drip feeds you like stuff along the way. So it doesn't just let you have everything or whatever. It will slowly introduce different means of like guns, different weaponry, as well as different means of traversal, different options, different blah, blah, blah. So you'll get stuff like a floating carrier. You'll have something that you can put all your stuff on and just pull behind you, drag along you. You'll get like guns that might like knock someone out. Then you'll get, you know, you can get like grenade launchers at one point, like, and all this stuff. So there's lots of stuff. You can get different cars and bikes, and you can customize them and all this stuff. So that's great. There's that whole thing kind of going on. The most important one for me by the end game was zip lines, because zip lines are literally what you think they are. You just build one place, one another place within a certain distance, and you can just go straight from A to B with no problem. Because a lot of the end, you're climbing up a lot of snowy mountains. And basically, I spent a lot of the end game past when I actually completed it creating a zip line infrastructure around the mountains. So I didn't have to climb anymore. I could just hop on a zip line and go to any of the bases that I needed to go to, which is quite interesting. But yes, you need resources to do this. You'll have metal, ceramics, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And there's this stuff called Corillium or whatever, which is basically this golden material that's quite cool, nice and shiny. That it's from like the world of the dead. Basically, it's like special material. And that's what this chiral network is kind of made up of. It's kind of connecting into the world of the dead in order to help facilitate this kind of internet between all these people. It's very weird in that sense. So one thing as well about your character, Sam, is that he's a bit special. His blood, piss and shit, and even the runoff from his showers are literally could be turned into weapons against BTs. For some reason, they don't like his blood or his piss or anything like that. And you're special in that way. Of course you are. You're playing a game. And so, yeah, in these like private hangouts, he has like a screen where you can get all your mission shit, whatever. He has a little place where the little baby sits and you can kind of go over and have a look at him. He's got his like backpack and you can customize that. You've got your suits and your guns. And they all look the same in whichever one you get. But then you have like a shower and a toilet, which you will actually watch him use, which is weird. And then, you can rest up there and just do whatever. And you also get kind of like a fast travel option a bit later on down the line.
So does he actually collect his own urine and feces to use within his arsenal?
Yeah. So you'll go for like a shit and it'll give you like, a little thing will go ding, like to the side, and it's like you've got a grenade.
Wow.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's really fucking surreal. What's even more surreal is that...
How explicit?
Huh?
How explicit are these scenes?
No, they're not. They kind of cover it up with like, this is it, right? Okay. So you see there's a lot of like nudiness. There's a bit of bum. There's no like nothing else apart from that. But if he goes to like a poo, I think his you only see from like outside of this cubicle, but it will have a Norman Reedus, as in the actor, show called Ride, as an advertisement on it, which is really weird because obviously you're Norman Reedus playing a character called Sam, and then all of a sudden you've got this real world advertisement for a real world program, TV program up on it. It's fucking surreal the way that Kojima does this stuff. Like, it's got Monster Energy drinks. So the idea that in this post-apocalyptic world, Monster is still churning out energy drinks. I'm trying to kind of keep this as simple as possible without it being too complicated. And you've got to think about like your shoes and all this stuff. You have to change your shoes every now and then and everything. So the idea of just moving is a constant, you know, negotiation. You've kind of got to think about it and plan it out properly and all this stuff.
I thought about the realities and practicalities of actually doing these things.
Yes, which people found really super boring, and I completely understand why. So I'll kind of come onto the multiplayer aspect of it in a sec. As you walk around, there's like lost luggage for some of the NPCs. Also, some other players would lose luggage and you can deliver it for them. You could deliver it back to them. You could put it in a storage facility and just go, I don't want to deliver it, but here it is somewhere safe and someone else can do it, which is really weird. Again, I'll come onto that a bit later. I'll come onto it now. So you've got, before I go into like the characters and stuff. So what's interesting about it is that it's called a strand game, which is a whole new concept. So the idea is, even though throughout the entire game, it's not multiplayer in the sense of someone won't just log on and play with you. It doesn't work like that. But everything that you do in your world has an effect on the world of other people and vice versa. So you might get someone in on your chiral network and you look around and suddenly you've got like part of a zipline structure that's been built by someone else in their game that's now found itself in your game. You'll notice that paths that are well used or that you've used before, instead of being just like a trail of snow or like, you know, nothing, it's just a path that you've just some grass that you've walked on, will now turn into like a more of a actual path. You'll notice that someone might have, whilst you've been gone and you come back and play 3 days later, someone's helped finish off your road that you've made.
How?
Yeah, and things like that.
How can this happen? How do they know?
I don't know. But the thing is, and you can actually go, so in your menu, you can look at your bridge buddies or whatever, and you can see like whatever the hundreds of people that you're connected to in your world and all their like stats and stuff. And all you can put up signs like you do in Dark Souls, actually. You can put up signs. And with the structures, people can like it and you can kind of customize them a little bit as well if you put enough resource into them. So there are times where like I just put up a fucking, I don't know, I did a road or whatever. And then I've come back like a week later and it's like got like 3,000 likes from real people or whatever.
Wow.
And you're like, it's so weird. There's just people out there just using this thing that I've made and it's just appeared in their world.
So does it connect you to a limited number of additional players for the whole duration of your game? Or is that, do you think, in constant flux?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's in constant flux. I don't know if it's... I don't really know the science behind how it actually works. But it's great. Like, there are times where you're just, like, walking around and there's, like, a bike that's there, a truck that's left at the side. It's been really helpful in some respects.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Can anything bad happen? Can you inherit anything?
No, there were times back in when it got first released where like people would leave like a truck that like won't let you get into a building that you need to get into or whatever. So you have the ability to actually dismantle things. So if something's in your way or fucking up your game that's just appeared in your world, you can dismantle it and it'll just disappear. Because there was a bit.
What an interesting concept.
Huh?
Troller. What an interesting concept.
It's really weird. Like, I've never really seen anything like it before, where you're having an indirect influence on each other's world, and you don't, and it's just happening. Like, you have no real control of it, and they're not there. They're just like, you know, they're just weirdly just around, but you're not seeing any of them. You're completely alone. And that's part of the appeal of the game, is it's very zen. Like, the whole thing is very isolating. There's a lot of times where you're walking around, the camera will pull back. You see this whole vista of you walking through this beautiful landscape, and then some music will just start to come in, and it'll be this like atmospheric, like evocative scene that you're suddenly now part of in this game. As you're just walking across this weird world that is apparently America. Anyway, it's strange. So that's kind of like, there's other stuff that goes on. Like, if you can rest places, you can eat these. If you piss somewhere and enough of you piss on one spot, it will turn into these like cryobites, which are these little things that you can eat and up your blood level and all this stuff. It's really weird. There's all these like little interesting mechanics to the entire game. But that multiplayer aspect is really key. And it helps you level up as well. If you build something that a lot of people are using, then it's great. And sometimes you're just walking around and it will say like, whoever, like whatever ID, like blah, 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 65 or whatever, has just used your ladder or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, wow, cool. So weird.
Yeah, that's quite gratifying, isn't it?
Yeah, it's weirdly like, so on a meta level, the game is about connecting with people literally, and also within the game's actual narrative, it's about connecting with people. So it's very surreal. It's very weird, but it is strangely satisfying in its own way. So I guess that is a really, really kind of generic overview of what the entire game is about from a moment-to-moment gameplay viewpoint. So I'm going to kind of delve into the story now a little bit, which is quite weirdly starts off, you think it's quite convoluted, and then by the end of it, you're like, oh, it actually makes complete sense in its own weird way. And it is very odd. So yeah, let's go into that.
It's story time. Sam Legatic.
So I'm going to completely fuck this up, but I'll try and do it as much as I can. So I'll give you an overview of the characters first, and then I'll go into the plot. So you play a guy called Sam Porter Bridges, which is, in the first place, it's like the fact that you are basically a porter, and the company that do this kind of delivery service are called Bridges, which makes sense a bit later, but you're like, okay, like Kojima has a certain thing for like just calling a spade a spade. he's not a fan of subtlety, put it that way. So your character, and I'm going to just say it now, we'll go into spoilers. So if you don't want to know about any of this, then, fair enough. But, you have some kind of, weird, you're scared of being touched by people or something. You have some kind of skin condition or some shit. I didn't really understand, where you don't like to be touched. So he physically doesn't connect with people as a person. There's that. He has this thing called dooms, which is that some people get, which is kind of like a multi-leveled condition where you have some kind of connection to this world of the dead. Let's put it that way. So he's like, oh, I've got like mid-level dooms or something, which means he can kind of generally sense when there's like BTs about. He can't see them or anything like that, but he can generally sense what they're about. There are characters, which I'll come on to, which can control BTs. So they will have like the highest level of dooms or whatever, I guess, because they can kind of manipulate it. But the idea is that, you know, there's like kind of special people out there and you're one of them. you find out, oh God, it's just so much that kind of goes on. So you find out that, God, how do I do this? There's a character who is the president, right? But how it's basically done, it's done in such a weird way. Like they're like, oh, Sam, I know that you left Bridges years ago and you're like working independently, but we need you to come back. Yeah, the president needs you for something. He's like, what do you mean president? There's no more America. He's like, no, this is the USC, the United States of Cities. And there's a president and we're going to bring America back together. We're going to, you know, connect each other and all this stuff, which weirdly reminded me of, you remember The Postman, the Kevin Costner film and the post-apocalyptic thing. And it was like, the post office is back. Oh my God, like the post office. And it gave these people like hope. I was like,
yeah,
it's weirdly a little bit like that.
I haven't actually seen the film, but I'm aware of it. And actually the whole time you've been talking about delivery and postman and everything, that's been springing up in my mind.
Yeah, it is kind of weirdly like that. And I'm surprised no one else has mentioned it. Well, I've seen. So, yeah, so you're like, okay. And they're like, oh yeah, by the way, the president, she's your mum. You're like, what?
Aye.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, okay. So the president is played by, oh, what's her name? Lizzie Wagner, whatever. I believe she was in, is she like the Bionic Woman or something like that? Is that a thing? I don't know. But yeah, she's like Maybe. Dying and she's laying there. She's like, you've got to connect the network, Sam. You have to finish my work. Ugh. And then she dies. And you're like, okay. And they're like, yeah, because she's dead, like these bodies blow up now, like we've said, like, you know, can happen. So can you go take her to be burnt? You have to take her to this basically sort of place up on the hill and burn her. So they strap her up and they tie her to your back and you've got to carry your dead mother across across this like fucking hill and all this stuff to burn her, in a Lovely. Crematorium or whatever, which is quite funny. But yeah, I mean, but I should say, like, before that, you're kind of like minding your own business. You meet a character called Fragile, who I'll come on to. And then you are told, and then you help this guy out and he's got his BB unit and they're like, oh, just help us burn this other body of someone that's died. And then you get caught by these BTs and someone's controlling these BTs. And then that body you're carrying explodes into a crater and you die. And that's when you realize that you're this repatriate who can come back to life afterwards. And you're like, oh, everyone's dead, but I've still got this BT. And they're like, oh, I'll keep that BT then. You can have that. And yeah, here's the president. So all that stuff's happened beforehand, I should have mentioned. So you go and burn your mother and then all these BTs appear. And that's when you have this little BT sequence that you're in control of now. And you try and get out of there without being caught and all this stuff. It's really fucking tense, those things, because the music changes, everything changes, and it gets like super, super fucking tense as you try and like make your way down, especially at that point, because you haven't got anything. You've just got to kind of get away from them. So anyway, and then you kind of come back and then you're like, okay, whatever, I'll do this kind of network thing. And they're like, yeah, by the way, your sister, Amelie, who looks exactly like your mother, but obviously a younger version, she's been captured by this guy called Higgs, who I come on to. And yeah, and here she is. And she's like, hey, can you come save me? You've got to travel the same route I did, get people on this network, and then get all the way to the West Coast, save me from these terrorists, and just basically connect up the whole of America. Cool. And you're like, okay, fine. So they're like, yeah, to do that, you have to slowly, you know, unlock and whatever and get to X, Y, Z and all this. And obviously explain the entire plot for the whole thing. So you're like, okay, fine. At the same time, like you're getting these weird like flashbacks or dreams or whatever, where you're on the beach, which is essentially this purgatory. You're holding like this baby. You're having weird things of when you're like a kid and Amelie, who looks exactly the same, is like, oh, don't cry, blah, 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 and all this stuff. And you're like, oh, okay. It's very weird. And you're seeing these like, and there's a shot where there's like these five, like they look like BTs or something, that in the sky, very far away. And you're like kind of looking out at them as they're like looking back at you. it's a really cool shot, and that kind of comes into, you know, you realize who they are a bit later on. So anyway, the majority of the game is you're doing all these, you're meeting these people along the way, you're trying to find out a bit more about the Death Stranding, and, you know, you're getting these people online. Higgs is this guy who's basically like the kind of more the antagonist, let's say. He's got this like golden mask, and he's like saying all these fucking normal bad guy things. And he can control BTs. So he like, right, every now and then you get a boss battle against like a fucking huge like BT monster, and he's like the one kind of controlling it. And he's saying things that you're just like, I don't understand what you're saying. But it becomes a bit more relevant to the plot later on. And that's quite interesting. So he's kind of popping up every now and then. But yeah, for the most part, you're just kind of, the whole idea of it is that you're meeting these new characters and that you're connecting with them. So you've got your boss, who essentially gives you all the tasks to do, who's called Die Hardman. And he's this like guy with a mask. And he's the one that kind of gives you your missions. He's the one, like, you know, your general, let's say. You're like, here, you've got to do this and do that now. And you do as you're told. So he's one guy. You find out later he has a bit more of a part to play in terms of your history. You've got this guy called Deadman. That's the Guillermo del Toro guy, who's basically like a Frankenstein of bits of body parts made together. And he's obsessed with death, because he doesn't have a beach, because he's not really alive or dead. He's like this kind of weird Frankenstein's monster. So whenever he's like, people talk about beaches, he's like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, I don't have a beach because I don't really have a soul. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. You've got Fragile. Fragile has her own like delivery service thing that you end up trying to use. She has this Dooms thing as well, but she can actually like transport you places, and she comes quite key later on, through her beach or whatever, because all beaches are connected in their own weird way in this weird afterlife. And she's like got this history with Higgs, where she was tricked by Higgs into delivering a nuclear bomb or something to a city, and it went off and destroyed the city, and now everyone hates her. And then he tried to trick her into doing it again, and she realized what he was doing. And she threw this nuclear bomb into a pit of tar. But he let her do it, basically. He gave her a choice of like, he was like, cool, you can either let this bomb go off and we'll just call it quits, or you can throw it into this pit of tar stuff, this dead fool shit, whatever, time fool stuff. But you have to walk through this time fool rain with this mask on. So she's like, okay, I'll do that then. So the idea, even though you don't really see it properly, is that her body is basically like the woman from The Shining, but her face and head are like all, is all young and pretty. So that's why she wears this, like, she's completely covered up when you see her. Yeah. So it's kind of messed her up mentally as well. So she's like one character. You've got her. You've got Hartman, which is Nicholas Winding Refn's character, who you meet quite later, fairly late into the game. And he's kind of like the historian. He's like the science guy from that aspect of it. He's trying to figure out the Death Stranding. And he dies every 20 minutes for 3 minutes. And then he comes back. And in those 3 minutes, he searches the beach for his wife and kid who died. And then gets brought back to life. And then he has another 20 minutes of doing whatever. And then he dies for another 3 minutes. So it's weird because there's like, you go and see him and then he's like, okay, cool, I'm just going to go die over here. And then he'll wait back. And then you can look around his room and he wakes back up and he's like, okay, cool. So as I was saying, which is really weird. So the kind of main thing that's happening throughout is that every time you plug into your BB before you go out, you get these little flashbacks of like being the BB in a hospital room, and Mads Mikkelsen is like talking to you and basically being like, oh, we'll be out of here soon, and like blah, 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 and all these like little soliloquies, and there's loads of them. There's like, I don't know, like 30 of them or something. Each time you plug in, you come out of your private room, wherever you plug in, you get these little clips. And then throughout the game, basically there's three moments, key moments, where you get sucked into this weird whirlwind, and Mads' character is like this war veteran, and you get to play in three wars. So the first time it happens, you're in World War One, and all of a sudden you've got planes flying overhead, you're in the middle of the trenches and all this stuff, and you've got to basically shoot him until he dies. Second one is in World War Two, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one is the Vietnam War. And it's just crazy.
How long do these sequences last?
About an hour. Each one, I'd say, about an hour and a half. And
it sounds like mini games.
It's these little like mini games, but it's like it's crazy because it's like all this stuff is happening around you, and you go from these really like quiet little bits, and all of a sudden you're out in the war. But it only happens those three times. And so this guy's called Cliff, and you're not really sure like what he has to do with your story until near the end. And the whole time, like Dead Man, the Guillermo del Toro character, is like, oh, there's something, your BB is all like strange. It's really weird. I don't really understand it. And it must be having something to do with the fact that you're connected to him and you're remembering stuff about this Cliff guy. We'll find out what happens there. And you're finding out about this conspiracy about how the use of BBs wasn't something, you know, that was really condoned or whatever. It's actually a bit evil, obviously. And that, you find out that Cliff's wife and the kid was the first experiment that they were doing with a BB and all this stuff. And there's a bit of like, you know, ethics kind of going on here with all this stuff. I'll kind of come on to that a bit later. Well, I guess that's kind of it in terms of the characters. Oh, there's Mama as well. And Mama's like a kind of like, you know, inventor, like a science engineer thing. And she is connected to a BT of her dead child, basically, that died died during the Death Stranding. She was trapped in some rubble. The baby was kind of born, but still attached. And it's now this BT that floats from an umbilical cord. It's really weird. She has a twin sister. I forget her name. I should have written it down, but she has a twin sister and there's a part in the game where you have to like, they don't talk to each other anymore. And then you kind of get them back together and they, you know, share a moment and all this stuff. So that's kind of all the characters that happen. So basically throughout the most part, you're doing loads of these deliveries and all this, and you're trying to make your way across the country, and you're getting these little tidbits of information, these Cliff things are happening and all this. And basically what you find out is that, it just gets really weird. Higgs is like, basically the world is looking towards its extinction. The sixth extinction is going to come, rather than wait for it to happen slowly. I'm just going to kind of speed it up so that we can just kind of get on with it. Like, why do the slow death? Let's just bring it on. It's inevitable. So you're like, okay, no, I'm going to stop you. Whatever. You can't just kill everyone. And then you find out that Amelie, who is your sister, is the sixth extinction, and what's known as an extinction entity. And there's basically like a ham-fisted story where like we've had five extinctions. With every extinction, there was an extinction entity. There was something that basically saw it in, that made it happen. But each time that there was an extinction, new life grew. Something stronger came up and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So what you start to realize, basically what the crux of the story is that you realize that your mum, who is the president, and your sister they're actually the same person. Amelie is the soul, and the president woman was the body. The body's died, so all that's left is like the soul. I know it's really weird, but like, okay.
How's that his sister? I don't.
Well, it's not. So it's not his sister. So he's been brought up to think that was his sister, but they're like, have you ever actually seen your sister apart from when you've been on the beach? And he's like, no. But yeah, she doesn't exist. And they kind of hint at it throughout the whole thing. Cause there's a lot of people going like, I've never seen Amelie, but you know, it's great that she's done this. And I wonder if I ever get to meet her in real life, and like blah, blah, blah. So they kind of hint at the fact that she might not actually be real. But then, yeah, apparently she's the soul version of the woman that's just died. But she's like, yeah, I'm an extinction entity. It's bad, isn't it? And you're like, oh, okay. So you kind of have this showdown with Higgs, and you basically almost kill him, but then Fragile sorts him out and whatever, and you don't really see him again. And that feels like it's the ending to the game, but it's not. And then he's like, yeah, you know, I've actually been working for Amelie. She's the one. And you're like, oh, what? And then at the same time, Cliff turns up and he's like, hey, I want my BB back. And that's the baby that you've got. And you're like, you're not having this baby. So that's what all these kind of war bits are about. You find out that Cliff and your boss, this Die Hardman guy, were buddies back in the war. And you're like, okay, I don't know what that's got to do with anything. And basically what happens is that it turns out in the end that Amelie was basically sick of having visions of the end of the world. And so she actually does, she's like, I think I just want the extinction to just hurry up and finish because I can't keep having these visions and just hanging on here, just waiting for it to happen in this weird purgatory. Yeah. So you're like, oh, she is kind of the bad guy then in a really weird way. And then you find out as well that Cliff, Mads Mikkelsen, the BB that you've got isn't his BB. It's just a baby. What's actually happening is those memories that you're having of him are actually your memories. So you, as in Sam, were the first bridge baby as such. And he tried to get you out of the lab and you were basically born. He pulled you out of the unit that you were in and you were accidentally shot as you were trying to escape. And you were shot by the president, who was wearing a mask for whatever reason. And her soul version was just so overcome with the fact that she just killed a fucking baby, a fetus, that she brought it back to life. But when she did that and took it back to the land of living, she started the Death Stranding. So the reason why you're alive is because the Death Stranding, you were brought back to life and you caused the death of all these of civilization, basically, almost.
Huge revelations at the end of this
game. Yeah, so this is all in the end game and you're like, okay, great. And then with Amelie, you basically just have to go over and give her a hug. And she's like, you know what? I've seen how humans will strive to make connections and how they won't just give up and blah, blah, blah. So yeah, we're going to kind of fight this together. We won't let it happen.
Although it is inevitable.
Even though it's inevitable, we're going to hold it off a little bit longer kind of thing. And who knows what might happen. Maybe, we'll be able to sort this out. So you find out those five figures that were watching you that you see every now and then across the beach are the five different extinction entities that have come before, which is quite clever in its nice way. And then right at the end of the game, Die Hardman is made president and he's like, oh God, I can't believe it. I'm so sorry, whatever, and all this stuff. And you're just like, dude, chill, just get on with it, be a leader, stop being such a dick, or whatever. It's a bit of a weird, highly emotive, melodramatic scene. And then they're like, yeah, you've got your BB is basically fucked, it's dead. So you have to go burn it because it's gonna explode otherwise. And so you're like, okay. And he's like, you could, if you wanted to, take it out, but that's illegal. But I'm going to you've got these handcuffs, right? That are it's almost like your iWatch or your phone or something, it has your information on, but they're weirdly, funnily designed like handcuffs, which is just strange. So he's like, but I'll kind of turn those off. So whatever, you can do whatever you want in the next 10 minutes. So you go and you take your BB, but instead of burning the baby body, you take out the thing, you see if you can bring it back to life. It comes back to life. You burn your handcuffs. So essentially you're off the grid now and you go outside and you realize the Death Stranding's over and it starts raining and there are birds and it's normal rain. It's not timefall rain. And that is basically the end of the game.
B. Because you burned a baby.
Because you didn't burn the baby.
Because you didn't burn the baby.
You've come to some kind of resolution. I don't really 100% fully understand it. It's very like Japanese weird. But there are really cool sequences in it. Like some of the bosses, you have like this, I think you saw it at the end of that trailer that you watched. It's like 100-foot-tall, weird, black, gooey monster thing. You have this like the kind of big battle at the end of the whole game.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Is this
that reminded me of that other game that we played.
Shadow of the Colossus.
Yes, yeah,
it's Colossi. Like that. It's like that. They've got another bit where it's like there's this big whale thing and you kind of got to jump over these buildings to get there, to like move around. It's just all this like really intricate stuff. So like the last thing you have to do before you get to that big boss fight is you've made it all the way to the West Coast, right? And to like switch on this like final thing, you have to go through like a pretty heavily densely packed BT territory, which is like super like nail biting, and it's horrible. But once you get to the end, they're like, you fight that massive 100-foot monster thing, and then it's like, okay, cool. We need you to go all the way back to where you first started. And you're like, okay. And they're like, yeah. And you can't use, the quick thing. You have to literally like walk or drive or whatever all the way back east. So you're like, okay. But they're like, yeah, but all your structures are basically gone. So it's like, okay. So it's weird because you've taken all that time to go back. And then at the end, the fact that you venture all the way to where you began, and along the way, like the world around you starts to turn into basically, it's like pure BT territory, and all the kind of bosses you fought before, there's now like three of them and you're trying to like get away from them. And you've got like guns and assault rifles and grenade launchers and all this shit that you kind of can put in with your own blood and all this to help like destroy them. But it's really tense and it's such like a struggle to go all the way back east to where you began. And when you go back to like the original bit, you think, well, I haven't been here for like 50 hours of gameplay. Do you know what
Christ.
I mean? And it's like,
is that not a bit demoralizing though? I think I might give up at that point.
No, it's nice because it's like, this is all the stuff that I started with, and like, look how much I've grown basically from and all this stuff that I've got. And I start like, I didn't have anything. When I was right here where I'm fighting this, the big boss of the entire game, I didn't have anything. I didn't even have a pot to piss in. I was just walking. Yeah, so it's pretty mad. But so like weirdly in the end game, I've been like building like zipline stuff, trying to upgrade my roads, trying to like 5-star these different settlements everywhere. And they all have their own little storylines as well. Conan O'Brien is in it as one of the characters. These are like people who are like the people that you deliver to, that he's put like other people in. So it's Conan O'Brien. He's another one. There's the, oh, I can't remember his name. He's the film director who did Kong, and he's doing the new Metal Gear Solid movie if that ever comes out. You've got
Peter Jackson.
You've got Edgar Wright. And just loads of other little people have like little cameos, which is really, really weird. Yeah, super, super interesting. And that's basically it. I don't really know what else, much more I've got to say about it. I've tried to like give it as brief and yet detailed analysis that I could. And there's obviously like a lot more to it, but I feel like that's pretty much the entire game.
It sounds extremely strange.
Yeah, it's very odd in more senses than one. But I understand why people fall off it, because it's like, essentially, it's what's known in gaming as like fetch quests. Go here and get that. Mm-hmm. And they're always the most boring things in gaming. You're like, oh, fuck it, all I'm doing is literally walking. But they've made the art of walking and traversal in a game, the game itself in its own, or like a good chunk of the game itself in its own way. Yeah, it's so strange. And like the way that the story kind of comes together at the end and makes sense in its own weird way is unbelievable, because I didn't think it'd be able to do that, but it has. The fact that it's got
sounds
like,
very cool.
Pulls out like war action sequences mixed in with these stealth horror sections as well, because some of those monsters are like horror movie shit going on. Really beautiful, just looks great. I'm just like, man, I was just obsessed with it. I just think it's brilliant.
One thing you haven't touched on very much is the music.
Yeah.
Which I've seen a few people commenting on.
Mm.
Should we go to Nerd Corner and have a muse on that?
Yeah, why not? Let's do it. So Dan, for Nerd's Corner, I should just say, I know we were talking about the Mondo delivery. Part of the Mondo delivery I'm trying to get is the Death Stranding soundtrack, both of them, as in the songs and the actual soundtrack score, I should say.
I thought it might be, because I was just looking it up and I saw, oh, it's by Mondo.
Yeah, I haven't got them through
yet. That's in your Mondo package.
Yeah. I should say the main music that's actually happens in the film, you know, in a film, well, game, and I say like it pulls out and you see like what's kind of going on around. The main band that are on that is a band called Low Roar. It's kind of Sigur Rós-y kind of ambient sounds that's good. It's really nice. But yeah, the score itself, like everything about the game, I'm just mesmerized by. I just think it's amazing.
So the score is by someone called Ludwig Forssell, is that correct?
Yeah, and I believe he's done a lot of cool stuff. I'm just trying to get his name up. But yeah, sorry, carry on.
Well, that's all I had to say. I noticed that they've done three different vinyl pressings of the score by Ludwig Forssell. Quite interesting, the packaging doesn't look anything like the game. It looks like a prog album from the 70s.
The hands.
Like Marillion or something. Yeah, these like hands in a sort of really abstract, surreal, especially in the like a gatefold sleeve in this like weird landscape with like some drapes, red drapes and some silver balls floating around. But there's three different editions. Which one have you gone for?
Well, I would like to have got the Splatter edition, which I believe is that. It's one of them anyway. You could get in a Splatter.
Yeah.
No, I've had to get the coloured one. It was the only one that was available.
Looks nice. Blue, gold and red. Three LPs of this music. That's a lot. I hope you enjoyed it while you're playing the game.
Yeah.
You're going to sit down and listen to all of this.
Yeah. It's for the collectability of it as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just realized Ludwig Forssell, he did the soundtrack for Metal Gear Solid 5 as well. That's what I've known him for, which is, yeah, the game that he did, that Kojima did before he left Konami. It's the last game he did. Yeah, I did enjoy the score. I thought it was just beautiful. It's just so weird because it's like most of the time you're just by yourself, just hiking up somewhere or just doing whatever. And when you get the bits of the music come in, it makes all the difference. It's just really melancholy and yeah, nice. Very fragile, but not too fragile.
I noticed the soundtrack, the songs from the video game, as well as Low Roar. You've also got one track by Apocalyptica. It's quite interesting.
Mm.
I've seen them play live.
Oh, really?
They're quite good. They do sort of like, I don't know, they look like a metal band, but they kind of play like four-piece ensemble chamber music or something like that.
Okay.
Like cello and, yeah. It's all very like quite, it's beautiful, but quite gloomy.
Yeah. Yeah, that thing on the cover of that one that you see, there's like, it's like a necklace with like five like black bars of licorice or something attached to it. So that's how you connect up to the chiral network, basically, is you kind of have this floaty necklace that you put into this weird machine bit and then come into the network. And you're always crying because it's chiral stuff, whatever makes you cry. There's a lot of crying in Death Stranding as well.
A lot of high concept stuff going on in this game. Mm. Was it all just created by this one chap?
Yeah, I mean, there's that constant kind of conversation about how much auteurism there is with games. Mm. So like a Kojima game will have more people working on it than like a Hollywood film. So even though it's directed by him, there will still be a ton of people behind that. And especially when it comes to something like a game where, you know, the gameplay itself and how that's designed and how that will work and be smooth and all that stuff. It's a lot of people that go into something like that. It's not just the same as pointing a camera and saying, you know, I want this shot here. Obviously, there's an element of that. You've got the cutscenes and whatever. But the idea is that the story is him and he's very much like, I want this and this is how it's going to be. So, you know, he's one of the few like auteurs in gaming, or considered as auteurs or anyway in gaming. So in reality, I don't know how much other people would have had an effect on that story, but to all in, you know, to everyone else, basically it's his story. It's his game. He's the main man behind it. I mean, it's by Kojima Productions. It's his own production company.
Okay.
But it's very Kojima in a sense of, if you look back on the games that he's done, it's tons of ideas crammed in. It's weird. It's over the top. It's completely crazy Japanese stuff. But people love it, including myself.
So what's your final impression on the game?
It's, for me, it's one of the most unique and interesting games I've ever played that will stick in my memory forever, for sure. It's bold and ambitious, and it's certainly something that at points defies how people currently understand what a video game should do. For me personally, I found it very cathartic and engaging, but it's quite an addictive experience and maybe want to venture back in as soon as I was finished. Like, I'm still thinking about it now. I've done the game. Like, I don't need to do anything else if I don't want to, but I still just want to go in and deliver and set up more, you know, of a zip line network and do all this stuff. It's crazy. Plot wise, completely melodramatic, insane, completely unsubtle. And yet somehow that's kind of exactly what I wanted it to be. And it's a great game. And I can totally see why people would hate it, completely see it. But for me, it kind of turned a lot of what I feel about gaming on its head. Same way like something like Dark Souls did, where it kind of ruined games for me a little bit because it took it to like a whole new level. And that's kind of what Death Stranding's done. It's kind of made me reinterpret how I engage with games. And it's very, very rare that a game can do that. And yeah, and that's the thing, is that it's like people, a lot, I understand the jokes and the memes of stuff of like, you've got this entire stack of stuff and you fall down a hill or whatever, or like, yeah, you know, you're just trying to like, you know, it's just how people are just like, why the fuck is it so difficult for me just to like go down this little hill? Like, this is the boss area or something. This is the most extreme difficult thing I've ever had to do in my life. But I'm like, yeah, but that's how it fucking should be.
Yeah, that's what, like what you said, it's just people's expectation of what the game should be, which he sounds like he's reevaluated and recrafted. Yeah,
exactly. And then, especially when you look at games that are released even now, like Assassin's Creed, where it's like, press R1 and hold, and he's just like flipping everywhere, coming up buildings, whatever. And it's just like that whole press up mentality of like, yeah, that there's minimal things you have to think about, like just, you know. And it's weird. And that's, I think for me, like the more, not grindier, but I don't know, the more I have to think about things, like the more effort I have to put into stuff when it's satisfying and it has a satisfying conclusion, I feel like I've earned it more. And it has like, yeah, you know, like when I'm starting with like this fucking huge package or whatever, or something that I've slept everywhere. And then I look at the top of this snowy mountain and I think, I don't know how the fuck I'm supposed to get up there. And then you get there and deliver it, you know, and you've just been doing it by yourself or like maybe with a ladder or just trying to like sludge up there and all this stuff. It's something weirdly gratifying about it that I just can't put my finger on. And in the same way, people might do that and think like, that was a, what a shit way to spend like 10 minutes of my life. I'm like,
well, a lot of people did, Sam. We've heard from you, but let's hear from some of those doubters and non-believers in reviews.
I hate it.
Yeah, I think you're very divisive if you check out all the reviews online.
Yeah.
Wyborn on Amazon gave it 1 star.
Yeah, here we go.
Walking simulator and Monster Energy advert.
Yeah, fair enough.
The game's very boring very quickly. All you do is walk from one place to another. Not to mention the Monster Energy product places are way over the top and have no place in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Monster thing is just weird. And obviously there's some money, you know, there must be some kind of figure attached to that. I think like when people say it's a walking simulator, you know, I think they're saying it with like a sense of irony or something, because a walking simulator is not quite the same.
Well, you say that, but I'm not sure Andrew has a sense of irony.
Right.
It's a walking simulator and you don't even get a dog to keep you company.
No. Well, that is
instead,
true.
You get a baby in it. Instead, you get a baby in a bottle.
A baby in a bottle, yeah.
And his review is called "I Got Blistered Feet and Gave Up."
Yeah. Well, again, I can completely understand why. The baby, by the way, what you might like, Dan, one thing I forgot to tell you is that if you fall or if you, I don't know, whatever, you get shot or something like that, BB will start crying. Now, he will start crying out of your controller, because there's a little speaker in PlayStation controllers now. So all of a sudden, I have a baby crying. Bear in mind, like, I've had kids. So the sound of a baby crying just does something to me anyway. And you have to push a button to look at your baby. You have to soothe BB, which means that you press the button to soothe, and then you rock your controller back and forth to try and calm him down.
Wow.
And then once he's all calm and stuff, you put him back and he's fine.
That's amazing.
It's weird, isn't it? But yeah, like
really
sometimes
good dip, like touches.
Yeah, it's nice. And sometimes like I've been sitting down with my wife and it's like the baby's crying or whatever. She's like, that is the most horrible worst sound ever. And it's like, why the fuck is it coming from your controller?
Yeah, that's really horrible.
Yeah, it's really weird.
One more.
Mm.
Review that poses a question.
Mm-hmm.
Who thought a game could be so boring? 1 star. Hello, adventurer. Have you ever wanted to be a grumpy delivery guy?
Yeah.
Have you wanted to deliver parcels across a breathtaking yet frightfully dull landscape? Do you idolise a situation where your only company is a baby shoved into a bottle that you strap to your chest? Quite specific, isn't it? Can you go for 50 hours or so of pure boredom without letting your soul die inside? If so, this is the game for you. Death Stranding fulfills your ultimate fantasy of being a post-apocalyptic delivery man strolling across some beautifully modelled, yet vast and devoid of anything of interest, landscape. There are challenges, of course. No, nothing guns blazing. You get to master the challenge of keeping upright whilst delivering packages. Other challenges in the game include trying to understand the storyline, surviving hour-long cutscenes, and moments when the camera pans to some dire hipster dirge music. There are, of course, challenges in real life, such as staying awake whilst playing, trying not to cry when a long cutscene can't be skipped and you have to endure it even longer, and the endless, endless boredom. Did I mention the breathtaking landscape? The game is played in third person, so you can enjoy the full effect of the packages you carry on your back. Oh, and there's breathtaking landscape.
Yeah, well, the landscape is breathtaking. I mean, yeah, that's the thing, is that I know what he's saying, and I completely understand. Yeah. Understand it. One thing as well about the cutscenes, it's true, Kojima, like, has a thing about these, like, really long, like, literally the length of a film. So, like, I always remember Metal Gear Solid 4, which is on PlayStation 3, one of the first games, I think, came out for it, Wired, anyway. I believe that when you complete the game, it's a 2-hour cutscene. So,
holy moly.
Yeah, so, and you might not be in the right place for it. So, like, with this was, like, an hour and a half or something like that. And it was like 1 a.m. So I didn't go to bed till like 1:30 or something.
Can you not save it and watch it later?
Well, I was like, I'll turn it off. But I'm like thinking, well, it's just that thing of like, you're just like, well, it's going to end in a minute. Like, it's going to stop.
Ruins the emotional.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I want to see it. I've got to this point.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's always that fear, isn't it? Of like, oh, I'll switch it off. And then like, there'll be a power cut or something. I'll turn it back on. And it's like, start me up in a new game or something. Like, no, I fucking missed it. Fuck's sake.
So we're haunted by the memory of 8 and 16-bit consoles. You can't save anything.
Well, yeah, exactly. Or having to have a separate memory card that you better not have anyone save over your fucking icon or whatever. Which became a whole thing. Or have it wipe accidentally. Or just fucking lose it or something.
Leave it too close to a magnet.
Yeah, as always. Credit card. Bloody magnets. Was there anyone that loved it? Apart from me?
I mean, no. I mean, loads. I just zoned in on the bad ones. To be honest, the ones that give it 5-star, which is 68% of the reviews on Amazon, do leave quite long reviews, it seems. They really
have to justify it. That's
like it. And they are very poetic in their appreciation. Yeah. One thing I think that everyone agrees on, even these bad ones, is that it is visually
It's great.
Very appealing.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks fantastic. Like, you know, and you'll see, like, if you look for, especially in the PC, because it's come out on PC, it came out on PC this year, weirdly. Because of what's happening, it is very current. It feels like delivery man in time by yourself.
Yeah.
And it's starting to get some PC awards, I should say this year, 2020, because it's 2021 now. And I believe it's got like a whole bunch of awards for the PC. But it comes with like a photo mode now and all this stuff. So some of the photos that you can take in game, and you can search for them, just look fantastic. And it does, honestly, like, the scenery is just great. It's beautiful. They've done such a good job with it. It's amazing. And I think it's so cool that it's supposed to be America. The idea that the America of old has completely gone. It's completely disappeared. And you're left with this now.
Yeah, that is nice.
It just doesn't look like America whatsoever. It looks great.
Like Planet of the Apes.
Huh?
Like Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always like to get a Planet of the Apes reference in, if I can.
Why not?
Before we go, 1 5-star review. Mm. Just one. So, 5 stars. Bit boring, a game. Really boring game. I sold it on after trying to persevere with it.
5 stars.
5 stars.
Of course. I would give it 5 stars. I when I talk to other people about it and other gamers and stuff, they're like, oh right, maybe I'll play it then. I was like, I don't know if you should. Like, I don't know. I don't want you to be annoyed or angry with me if you fall off it. But put it this way, I am obsessed with it, and I'm thinking about switching on after talking about it, even though I've done it, and just seeing, like, even if it's to check in just how many likes I've got for my latest, all the stuff I've put up. I wonder how that's doing now.
How's that tarmac drive
doing? Yeah, exactly. You'd love
that,
all that.
That crazy paving.
Yeah, you'd love all like the fucking BT shit. So all like the roads as well, like have all this like black gooey shit like dropping from the bottom and all this stuff because of the way it's put together. It just looks great. Yeah, and those BT monsters cool. I think you'd like as well.
Presumably the best option for you at this point, or the best outcome, would be a second game. Is that coming?
I doubt it. I like the idea more that so one thing actually, like, I know we're coming to the end, but to quickly pick up on, is the fact that Sony gave him the vast amount of money to do this project, which is crazy when you think about it. AAA, big, well, I don't know, but I don't know offhand. But it would have been a fair amount. Because it's exclusive for Sony as well. They've got it on PC now, but at least it years exclusivity, whatever. Or 6 months, maybe. But the idea that Sony were willing to put that much money behind Kojima is extremely impressive for a game that is extremely divisive. But he's literally made the game he wanted to make. And it's like its own little, like, it's not little, but like its own work of art. And I think that's amazing. And I don't want him to feel like, I mean, after he finished Metal Gear Solid, I think that was it. I think he felt like he was done with like the Metal Gear series. Bear in mind, he'd made Metal Gear 1 and 2, or whatever, and then Metal Gear Solid, and then Metal Gear Solid 2, 3, 4, 5. And and after each one, he kept saying, I'm not doing another one. But obviously, what more? Konami made him do it, whatever. But the idea is like, he's done Death Stranding and that's its own thing. And now he'll move on to like a different IP. I kind of want him to do like something like what Chris Nolan might do, even though he did the Batman trilogy, which I suppose is his own version of Metal Gear Solid, whatever, where it's like he now can just choose stuff that he wants to do. And I'd rather like go big and bold and upset some people and, you know, but you've just done what you wanted to do and you've gone full whack into that. I'd rather that than try and make something that's just going to make everyone happy.
So you hope he'll move on and do something completely different
in his next game? Yeah, I do, I don't know what that might be. I mean, also, like, he's made different games before. Like, this is quite... Some of the elements in this feels very Metal Gear Solid 5. Like, he did, like, Zone of the Enders, which is weird. Like, Police Nauts, I think that was him as well. So, you know, his whole history isn't just Metal Gear and Death Stranding. He's done other stuff as well. So, yeah, I'm interested to see what he comes up with next.
I'd like to see him bring this concept to the Toe Jam and Earl franchise.
Mm. Yeah, why not? Yeah. Well, I mean, in all seriousness, like the big thing, if you remember that PT demo that I talked to you about, anyway, that was him.
What was that?
Kojima. It's the thing where it's like a demo and they took it down after like when Kojima left Konami and you can't get it now. It doesn't exist. But I've got a playthrough of me doing it. It's like one of the scariest things ever. I didn't find it particularly scary, but there were some bits of it. A lot of people did, basically. But that was actually a promo tool to show off the fact that they were making a new Silent Hill game called Silent Hills with Norman Reedus, with Kojima, with Guillermo del Toro. And I'm like, that's what I would want to see. Some like fucked up horror shit and see what comes out of Kojima's brain when he's attached to that. You know, he was working with Junji Ito, who I'm a fan of. I don't know if you know who that is, the Japanese. I've got a few books of his upstairs. He's a Japanese artist. He does the most fucked up drawings. You'd love it. I'll send you some stuff. So, and there was actually like a trailer for what Silent Hills might be, like a bit of a promo thing. And it's just really fucking weird. It's great. So, you know, for me, I would like to see what Kojima would have done with the Silent Hills. And if he can do a horror game next, then bring it on. I'd love that. It'd be brilliant.
Well, maybe he's listening. And maybe he'll get tinkering away as soon as he hears us.
Yeah. Go on, Hideo. I've been saying Hideo.
Get on with it.
Hideo. cool. I think that's it then, mate, isn't it?
That is. All we have left to do is reveal what next week's topic will be.
Yes. Well, instead of doing the randomizer, the fact that we watched Wonder Woman 84 recently, and it was, spoilers, it was dire. So I think seeing as it's very on trend at the moment, still, hopefully anyway, we're going to kind of delve into that because it is really odd in its own way. Of being
that odd that it was made.
Just the way they've done it. it's just so weird. It's such a weird decision that they've gone in with this film in so many ways. And also it's very mainstream, but also it's DC and no one really likes DC movies. Not Batman, do they? So I think we're going to have a little chat about that next time. So look out for that.
Cool.
Thanks everyone. And see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hey guys, thank you for listening to Oddcast Movies, Music and Gaming. If you want to get in touch with us or get a movie, album or game put on our list to discuss, then email us at oddcastoddballs@gmail.com or a new winter podcast at gmail.com. This is part of a new winter podcast network, so head on over to anewwinter.net to check out our other shows. You can also follow us on Instagram at anewwinter, Twitter at anewwinter, and you can head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/anewwinter. Thanks for listening and see you again soon.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.